Travolting presents Bobbin for Robin. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Recapping the thespian era. Enjoy the episode.
I can't believe it's over.
I know. It feels like it had just begun.
Yeah. Not the show, but kind of the run of good movies.
Yeah. I mean, we still got AI.
No, we still have, like...
We have
some good movies.
Yeah.
We have, you know, AI and Insomnia, Happy Feet 2.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting stuff to discuss, but we're out of, like, kind of the decade of Robin Williams.
Yeah.
I would say, like, from, like, 1990 to 2000, which is more or less the period we just covered.
Yeah.
The next few movies are still 99.
Plus or minus 1 or 2 years, give or take.
It's like the decade of Robin.
Yeah.
From, like, Dead Poets Society on to Good Will Hunting and What Dreams May Come is kind of, like, the period of rule that he has over pop culture.
Yeah. I mean, like... just the level of control that Robin has over all facets of his capital.
Yeah.
Being like the family man blockbuster role and also the comedy and also the serious dramatic role.
Yes.
Just the bangers and all the ones, like, you know, that,
like, even the movies that we didn't really like in this period, like, there was still undeniably, like, Robin is the impetus for them getting made.
Yeah.
A thing that we're going to just start quickly losing.
Yeah.
Like, we have a few more years of it. They're just flops. And then it kind of gets to, like, Robin is popping up in other people's movies.
Yes.
Or he is starring in a movie that he is not, like, directly
he's not the lead.
Involved in creating.
Yeah.
And pushing to the forefront.
Getting Robin on is not the green light. It's the bonus.
Yes.
This is the period of getting Robin in your movie gets it greenlit.
Yes.
Like Jumanji. Or Jack, or a bunch of other movies that we can cover that are like, because you've gotten Robin in this movie, we will not make it.
Yeah. I will say this is an era where Robin manages, for the most part, to maintain his integrity as an artist.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, he's doing, like, movies for profit, like Jumanji or Aladdin or whatnot. But I'd say for the most part, he manages to maintain his artistic integrity.
Yeah.
By consistently working in, you know, smaller scale in movies like Fisher King or Good Will Hunting.
Yeah, I mean, like, because
this era ends with him winning an Oscar, you know?
This era ends with him winning an Oscar. And, you know, like, there's been a few, like, you know, people pointed out, like, you know, why are you making this the act break of Robin Williams? Like, why is it happening after What Dreams May Come before Patch Adams? Well, and we're going to get a lot of this in the Patch Adams episode. So,
yeah.
Spark Notes version is like, as I'm reading the biography and also just looking at his career, it's like the level of which, like, Robin's prestigious acclaim capital, the rate of which that descends is critical in its, like, speed the moment Patch Adams comes out. Like, it just wouldn't feel right to start to cover this whole era with Patch Adams being the last one, because, like, that is, and along with the movies that come after right away, the movie that starts to torpedo his prestigious capital.
Yeah. Like, Patch Adams, which we'll talk about, in spite of getting him a Golden Globe nomination, is, like, kind of mocked. It's very mocked. It's like, and it's a box office success, but, like, you can really just see, like, Robin has, like, exceeded his reach. The schmaltz is too much at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing too many quirky doctors.
Yeah, too many quirky doctors. And
then you follow that up with, like, Jacob the Liar and Bicentennial Man. And it's like, it's game over.
Yeah. It's, and all this to say, like, you know, we're talking about this period of high success for Robin.
Yeah.
And we'll get into all of the symptoms and the processes, yeah, and
we'll
the problems
about why
that
it falls
happen.
Apart in the future.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But for now, we're here to celebrate.
We're here to celebrate. Yeah. Fuck it. God damn it. We're here to fucking celebrate the great Robin Williams in this moment. And I want to take us back to before the first retrospective, The Comedian, because, you know, I have said many times that, like, I think Moscow on the Hudson deserved a little bit more love than I think it got, personally.
Oh, yeah, it's good.
I think it's such a great movie, and it's one of those movies that I think is the initial views that synthesizes Robin in a way that other previous projects, of which there are only four, had done before. It's like the first impetus of, like, how do you make Robin elevate your movie? Not just put Robin in your movie and hope he does well, but, like, how does the Robin of it all elevate the quality of your movie? Yeah. And I think Moscow and the Hudson is the first, like, drip in that bucket. Then you get to Good Morning Vietnam, and it's like, this is where you have a movie that is built around the aura of Robin Williams. This, everything about this movie is built for Robin's expertise, yeah, and in the ways that he can, like, really flex, like the disc jockey scenes, like having those, like, quick little heartfelt moments and then jumping back to, like, a nice whimsical, yeah, moment. Like, the movie is structured around what he's good at. And after that, Dead Poets Society, Robin seems to be at a certain point, like, Dead Poets Society feels like a movie where he takes the reins,
yeah,
of what's elevating that movie. It's not that the movie's built around him for his success to elevate it. It's Robin jumps into this movie and elevates it himself.
Yes.
That's a huge difference.
He elevates himself difference. And he also finds, like, the good dramatic tone for him to be in.
Yeah.
Like, Good Morning Vietnam works because he finds a synthesis of, like, the dramatic side and the comedic side.
Yeah.
Dead Poets Society, and we talked about this, is, like, him figuring out where his lane in, like, a purely dramatic role is. Like,
yes.
He has funny bits in that movie.
Yeah.
But for the most part, he's, like, he's playing a very dramatic role in a very dramatic movie. And yes, he finds exactly, like, the needle to thread.
Yeah. Yeah. And he gets an Oscar nomination for it. His second one. And we get a few movies in between: Cadillac Man, Awakenings. I almost didn't even talk about Awakenings.
Pretty good.
Pretty great. That's another movie where it's like he's right next to a
He's holding his own against Robert De Niro.
He's holding his own against Robert De Niro, who Robert De Niro, like, does a really good, you know, he does really good a lot of things. But, like, from my perspective, it's like, I think of Robert De Niro, I think of Goodfellas, I think of The Irishman, I think of a lot of these mobster movies. Yeah. And seeing Robert De Niro tackle this role, I'm like, oh, that's a really big risk. But he's, like, going for it, and he's, like, serving. He's doing a good job in it. But it's, again, to go to the Robin of it all, it's seeing Robin and Robert do this kind of dance around each other in this movie that really works for the plot and the structure of it all.
Yeah.
So,
this is, like, he continues to kind of do the back and forth between, like, the comedic roles, because he follows up Awakenings with Shakes the Clown, while also popping in to add some flavor to, like, some studio releases.
Yeah.
Popping up in Dead again for a little bit.
And then we get, I think it's, that we're going to talk about our favorites, our least favorites, underrated, but, like, I still think The Fisher King is my favorite Robin Williams performance. I think
he's incredible in it.
I think it's his best.
It's a great movie. He's incredible in it. He's a great duo pairing with Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
It took me a second to remember if it was Jeff Bridges or Jeff Daniels. This happens a lot.
Yeah. But I think Fisher King is another movie where it's like, did Robin find the role or did the role find Robin? I think that's the perfect question for this movie, because, like, He isn't tuning himself to any one facet that the movie needs. It's just Robin is effortless in that movie.
Yes.
And yet it's still the most risky performance. I don't know how the two seem to work together, but it seems like watching The Fisher King, it's like he's doing a lot of things I've never seen him do before. He's taking a lot of risk.
Yeah.
And yet it feels like it's effortless.
Yeah. And he has the clout as a proven box office success and, like, a cultural icon, that he can help get a movie like The Fisher King made.
Yeah.
That might not have been made otherwise.
I just, like, zoom in just a very quick second. Like, when he's having that, like, you know, that mental breakdown under the bridge before the the dudes in skateboards and switch knives beat him up. That look on his face that he has of the bright light shining in his face, like that frame of Robin just like looking up at that, like seared into my brain. I will never get that image of Robin looking up and just like almost like gladly accepting his doom.
Yeah.
It's so good. And he even says some lines, but none of them matter. It's all kind of gibberish.
Yeah.
Like, I think he says thank you or something, but he could have said like, murmur.
He could have said, wah.
He could have said, wah. But like, no matter what, it's just like, just his presence there is so like, oh, it's so heartbreaking. So Fisher King, super good. And then we get Hook.
Yes. Very divisive movie. I think a problem for his career. It's like the first fault line is popping up with Hook.
I've had a lot of guests that said otherwise, Jeff.
I know, they're all wrong. It's crazy.
I'm just saying.
I asked them all, when's the last time they watched Hook?
I think Hook is a great movie. I said it on the Hook episode that I looked into all the blowback that it was getting. And I was like, maybe I haven't seen this movie in a while. Maybe I just need to watch it again and it'll reveal to me. And I did. And I was like,
if a movie works for you, it works for you. And I have a lot of respect for that.
The needle drop never came for me. It never did. I still loved it. Yeah. And I still loved Robin. Now, to just put all that fluff aside, though, to kind of narrow down on what your main criticism are, it's like, this is the first crack of like Robin playing a kid.
Yes.
The adult.
He is being held back. The man in a kid
in a man's body sort of trope. And I do agree with that. I do agree that while I don't think it's a problem in this movie, it is the first step of a trend that will become a problem.
And I don't bemoan him taking that movie. Like, Robin Williams plays adult Peter Pan in a Steven Spielberg movie. Does seem like an easy layup. Like, I'm not going to dispute the like, I totally understand why you would say
that. And I think it serves him pretty well. We disagree, but I think like, regardless, we agree that like he did a good thing taking that movie.
I think he made it makes sense for him to do it.
Yeah.
I do think overall it was a mistake on his end. Hook more like Sook.
Hook me in and hold me in.
He follows it up immediately with a wish for wings that work, which we're not going to talk about anymore. And then does Ferngully. No, it's a run of three animated movies. It's like his first, because he does a wish for wings that work, Ferngully, and Aladdin.
The Albatross.
That run of three, like, it's just like, little does he expect that he's laying the groundwork for essentially the last act of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Because he becomes such a voiceover guy later.
Yeah. I think it's almost like, I imagine this narrative of him stepping into a booth for the first time and being like, oh,
Betty.
Yeah. I can just kind of go off and riff forever. I could do my Robin Williams thing and it's good because they can pick what they like and they can pick what they don't like.
Yeah. Because off of his success as a voiceover artist over those three movies, like Disney does the Timekeeper show with him. And then he is in... he's in two Happy Feet
movies.
He's in Robots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only a few movies, but like his voiceover persona just gets becomes like kind of his lifeline at the end of his career.
Yeah.
Like those movies are like the layup successes. Like he can still come in, do a funny voice in a kid's movie, be the selling point. Like he is the selling point of Happy Feet. He is the selling point of Robots.
That capital never goes away.
So it's like, it's interesting that he lays the groundwork here and he doesn't really seem interested in going back to it until his career starts faltering a decade later.
Yeah. You realize that the prestige capital is quickly declining.
Yes.
And so what do you still have? Well, people still love Aladdin.
Yeah.
People still love the genie. People still love me and kids.
And
movies.
You can still do that very easily and quickly.
Yeah. And make a good amount of money.
Yes. Make good bank.
But all that to say, and he has a skyrocket with Aladdin. That's what gets him on the blockbuster map.
Yeah,
I mean,
the
like,
thing that's funny is like ultimately, like, I'm looking up Robin Williams' obituary because, like,
it's like the role that he's like listed.
I'm like, what's the obituary? It's something that Cole brings up a lot on Above the Title, his podcast. Like, what's the movie that gets listed like when you are the star of this thing?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at Robin Williams in The Guardian, and it is Good Morning Vietnam is what they list.
Interesting.
For the New York Times, it's Oscar-winning comedian. Interesting.
Well, I mean, like, rose to fame playing the alien Mork in Mork and Mindy, received a first leading role in Popeye, won Academy Award for Good, blah, 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 Good Will Hunting, his other Oscar-nominated performances.
Yeah, it's interesting. And he seems to have, like, not to jump ahead, but, like, for his obituary, it does seem like he mainly just, like, was cited as a comedian more so than anything else.
But, like, the thing is, like, right after Robin's death, it was so much more of a loss of, like, that presence on the earth rather than, like, a great actor who had some good roles.
Yeah.
I think that's what people mourned the most about Robin passing away is, like, we had this cloud of joy called Robin Williams, and that cloud went away. And it was more so, like, you got, like, this, it's, like, all, like, the emotional, like, YouTube clips that came out after he died of, like, all the voiceovers and the sappy cut sequences. Yeah. They all feature all of his, like, very sentimental,
yes,
bright, sunshiny, happy stuff. Like, we don't really ever get a cut of the genie.
Yeah.
But because it's, like, again, it's that smile. It's that laugh. It's that, like, it's the quip. It's, like, the hug or the gesture, like it's all of those little pieces that I think, like, when Robin's passed away, that, yeah, people were like, oh, that's no longer there anymore. Like, and we might have even taken it for granted towards the end of his life, yeah, that we weren't as appreciative as it was as we are now.
It does very much frequently feel like when these, like, Hollywood legends pass away, that, like, we were very unappreciative near the end of their life of, like, the work that they had given us.
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot about, like, David Lynch passed away this January.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously everyone had been pretty, very appreciative of what he had given us, but he, like, couldn't get funding for his last movie he was trying to make. Mm-hmm. He was trying to make an anime movie called The Snoots. And, like, he couldn't get funding for it.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix said no. Mm-hmm. And, like, then he died. And it's like, we celebrate these people when they pass, but it's like near the end of their life, like, they're struggling to get things made. They're living very comfortable lives. I'm not going to say they aren't. Like they're very wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, we maybe should just, like, consider the living legends and, you know, throw them a bone. Like, yeah, it's great that Spielberg and Scorsese and all these guys are in their 80s now and, like, can still get movies made. But there's a lot of guys out there who are still, you know, trying to keep their work going.
I agree.
Not to drive us away from this.
So yeah. But then, so I think it's like Aladdin is like the rocket ship that takes us to the moon with Robin, because after that, it's like Doubtfire, couple movies.
Yeah.
I mean, we get Being Human, which is like
Being Human
is
like nothing.
Last week we talked about What Dreams May Come.
Yeah.
And Being Human seems like the first, like, prelude to this sort of
Robin, like, trying to be taken. I don't say trying to be taken seriously, but, like, trying to, like, reach a higher brow.
It seems like it's like when Robin tries to be taken more seriously is when, mm-hmm, he's not taken seriously. Yeah. It's the movies where he doesn't try to be taken seriously that we do take him seriously. Like, yeah, Good Will Hunting doesn't feel like he's trying to be a serious actor.
No, yeah. He's just giving a performance.
He's just giving a good performance. But it's movies like Being Human and What Dreams May Come where it's like, I can feel you trying to win my respect and you don't need to. I just respect you as an actor. You don't need to, you know, put this much effort into it. And it's by the exercise of putting this much effort that actually hurts the respect level that I have.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm going to pin mark that for later. That's good for down the line. In Search of Dr. Seuss, 9 months. To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. What a lovely movie we covered.
Lovely little movie.
We always talk about, like, the movies that we would have never seen had it not been for this podcast. And I think in that category, that goes to this in this era. To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar is a movie that I would have never watched if it wasn't for the podcast. And boy, am I glad I did.
There was two retrospective screens of the movie recently in Chicago, which was really cool.
Nice.
They showed it at the Music Box and they showed it at an AMC of all places.
That's great.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
I was not able to make either because we were working.
Yeah.
But Like that and the Birdcage is him using his clout and like kind of passing on to like a you know, minority group and like trying to get that, you know, attention paid to like LGBTQ films.
Yeah. Without overshadowing it.
Yeah, without overshadowing. Like obviously he's in Wong Thru very briefly, he goes uncredited. And then in the Birdcage, obviously he's the lead, but still like
But he's not the flamboyant like gay.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, I feel like that's like his way of being like,
it's weirdly a very respectable performance.
Yeah.
You know, in a way that he's not like, you know, timid. He's playing like, he's playing stereotypes still, but it still feels like a, it still feels like it's a relatively well acclaimed performance. It's my favorite movie of this era.
It's like probably in the top three. I mean, The Fisher King will always be a number one performance. And The Birdcage is probably second place.
Yeah.
Just because, like, he's not doing a bit. He's not doing, like, a character.
Yeah.
He's just doing a good role. Like, that's it. Yeah. He's just doing a really good role in that movie. Takes the material seriously.
It's just
seriously.
A good movie.
And it's a good movie. It's just a good movie.
Birdcage, dub ass.
I laughed my head off watching this movie. And the movie came out, like, fucking 20 years ago.
Yeah,
like 30 years ago. So it's, like, it holds up. If you haven't seen The Birdcage in a while, re-watch it today.
He does Jumanji in this mix. It's just kind of, like... Well, it's a family comedy that, you know, kind of...
Yeah, that's a movie that reaps its successes off of the name billing. Yeah.
That's also like a time bomb movie where like it's a big success at its time.
Yeah.
But its real success for Robin is like 20 years later when like all the kids who watched it when they were kids are now adults and like thinking back on their love for Jumanji and posting about it online.
Like Hook.
Like Hook. Well, Hook less so is a time, not much of a time bomb movie. Jumanji ends up getting like two fucking sequels. There's a third one coming out next year.
I think it's hitting the same button for me with Jumanji, where it's like Jumanji, I see the flaws in it, but I still like the charm that Robin
Jumanji
portrays to it. But Jumanji made a boatload of money, if I'm not right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jumanji made a shit ton of money, and the movie's like got a lot of flaws. But that is just because, like, it's Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Which leads, and it doesn't hurt his credibility. If anything, it's just a testament to how much credit he has as, like, a blockbuster actor. Aladdin King of Thieves, of which we will not speak of.
No, Aladdin King of Thieves is fine. It's whatever. It's whatever. A direct-to-video movie. He does it as a favor.
Jack!
Less said, the better.
This is like I think Jack is a good.
No, we got
a
dog.
We got to highlight Jack.
Unfortunately,
because
we do have
like
to talk about Jack.
That is a trajectory movie. That is a movie of like along with Dead Poets Society, Aladdin, Birdcage. Like these are trajectory movies, and Jack is an unfortunate trajectory movie.
Yes.
Why is it an unfortunate trajectory movie?
Because he's once again playing
a
kid.
Yes.
And even more than that, it's just a disaster of a movie.
Yes. This is where like...
It like turns him into a laughingstock.
Yeah.
In a way that he is able to recover from.
Jack is what would happen if Hook was a bad movie.
Which it is. Jack makes him a laughingstock in a way that he is able to recover from because he... mostly because of Good Will Hunting so quickly after.
Yeah.
But then after Good Will Hunting, when he becomes a laughingstock again, there is no recovery movie.
Right. That's teed up right away.
Because like the run of Jack, small role in Secret Agent, small role in Hamlet, and then Father's Day and Flubber is like kind of a like you're cooked type run.
The train got a little too fast
and now we're
starting to get off the tracks
here. He's very lucky and smart to have Good Will Hunting right after that to like quickly regain all of his credibility.
Yeah, it's like
and win him that Oscar.
The train is getting a little shaky and then
Good Will Hunting. You're back on good tracks. And then there's like a dastardly villain laying a damsel and a pile of TNT on the track.
I love this Western metaphor that you and I both went with on this one. Yeah, because like, you know, Jack, monumental trajectory movie that really tarnished that. That is a movie that where, as we said, Jumanji made a lot of money, but has a lot of flaws. Didn't really hurt his career. Jack is a movie that like that really hurt him in his credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Secret Agent. Meh. Hamlet, meh. Hamlet's almost like a case study in its own right because it's like, that's a movie like you add Robin in one scene and he's bad.
Yeah, he's bad. He's not good in that.
It's like, really? Like, you can't come in a one scene and just do something other than the whole like, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, he's doing the Robin thing and that one, two scenes he's in, I'm like, I don't like this, bud. Mm-hmm. Like, this doesn't feel good. Father's Day, the biggest sin of this era, because it's like the one chance you get with Billy Crystal and Robin Williams in a movie together.
Yeah.
It just fucking washes down the drain.
Yeah.
With my hopes and dreams. Cause it's what everybody wanted. Everybody yeah. wanted a Robin Williams, Billy Crystal, buddy.
Yeah.
It
was like the fucking monkey puck finger yeah. curls.
And it just like, it was horrible. Deconstructing Harry, Robin has like a Robin's use in that movie is good. And we said like Robin's good in his small role in that movie, but he's aided by the good use of him. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like he doesn't have a good use in Hamlet, but he could have done something interesting, but he yeah. doesn't. So it's bad. And Deconstructing Harry, he has a good use. So there's not much he needs to do extra.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my best way to like categorize like Deconstructing Harry.
Yeah. I mean, he's literally out of focus for the whole movie.
Literally.
Which is
Flubber.
I'm sorry to say, still a good bit.
Yeah.
What am I going to say about Flubber? I'm sick of saying Flubber. I'm sick of saying the word Flubber.
Hasn't everybody made a Flubber in their life?
When did I say that? That was the tagline. I cannot remember why I said that.
You said it.
I know I said it, but why? Do you remember why I said it?
I think it was when he made the Flubber. You said, and he made a Flubber. And we all made a Flubber.
Yes, we've all made a Flubber in our lives. I just generally was reading that. I'm like, why did I say that?
People are quoting that line now.
Yeah, it's very popular.
It's a very popular line.
It's very
popular. Hasn't everybody made a Flubber?
All the Travolting fans, the thousands worldwide are
saying,
going around
hasn't everybody
saying,
made a Flubber?
Rumors indicate your favorite president is going to make an announcement about Flubber soon. He's going to say, we have a Flubber. It is in the White House.
causing mayhem.
He's going to say, we're going to release the Flubber. It's going to be tremendous. Everybody's going to want Flubber.
Good Will Hunting.
It's the best. It's great.
I can talk about that the least. He's great. He's perfect. He's so dialed in. He's so locked in. Everything around him is great. He's great. He does a good job. It's great.
Yeah. Good. I mean, like, Good Will Hunting is just such a beautiful movie. He is so wonderful in it. And it is just like, it's the ultimate, like proof of like what Robin can do with the dramatic performance, like what he's able to achieve with that movie. It's lasted for 30 years.
Yeah.
Like,
still comes back.
It is still relevant for people. It's still like a comfort movie for people. It brings people back.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it's like, you know, his greatest achievement. It's not his best performance. I think it's probably his greatest achievement. Like,
yeah.
Is the legacy that movie has left for him.
On the episode, we went on a whole little spiel about like actors winning Oscars because it's their turn versus it's deserved.
Yeah.
And this is like a good synthesis.
I think it's both.
It's both.
He's winning because it's his turn, but he's also like, he's well worthy of the award.
I think he gives the best supporting actor performance of 1997.
Yeah. If there's going to be a Robin Williams like Oscar, it should be that one. I also would probably give him an Oscar for Aladdin of all movies, but I don't know if you can do that.
The Fisher King.
Fisher King, too.
I'm sorry to bring this up, but like once again, who did he lose to in The Fisher King?
I cannot remember.
I remember looking at it and be like, okay, I guess that makes sense. It was like, because he was nominated.
I'm looking now.
That was 1991, so it'd be the 1992 Oscars.
Yes, it is.
1992 Oscars. What movies came out in 1992 Oscars. So
he loses to Anthony Hopkins for The Sounds of the
yeah.
Lambs. I'm sorry to say, he's not
winning that Oscar. Like, it's fine. I get it. But like,
it is always funny when you're like, who the fuck did that? Why did they not? And you're like, Oh, yeah.
Okay. So that makes sense. And
yeah, unfortunately, The Sounds of the Lambs, you got to give it to him.
Yeah. And like, I don't necessarily care who he beat in Good Will Hunting. I don't necessarily care that much, but I just know like whoever was up. The movie came out in 97 and 98 Oscars, like whatever great supporting actor performance came out in 97. Regardless, like he was deserving of it. And then What Dreams May Come.
Yes.
Which you heard our 2-hour episode last week on our thoughts and feelings on that movie. Robin not being the problem, but
not the solution either.
But he's not the solution either. As we talked about him being human, this is like grabbing you by the collar and being like, please take me seriously. I'm in hell. And it's mm-hmm. like, okay, dude, but like, why?
Yeah. Yes.
Like, I'm looking at the train wreck behind you called the movie you're in, and like you pulling me in is not doing you any favors. And it's not going to do any favors in Insomnia. It's not going to do any favors in Patch Adams and Jacob the Liar and Bicentennial Man, 1 Hour Photo. Like all these movies where you like, you may not even be the problem in those movies. Newsflash. Some of those movies, he is the problem. But just by the sheer thing of like, please take me seriously. And like the movie behind you is not working to your benefit. Like, I'm sorry, but like there's only so much you can do. Okay.
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr. could not make The Shaggy Dog a good movie. Okay. And nor did he have any intention on making it a good movie, as we've seen by his performance, as we talked about. But yeah, that's his run. It's a fantastic run. I've already said, I mean, these retrospectives are always really short episodes, as you know, as we mentioned many times, but like favorite, least favorite, underrated. The Fisher King is my favorite. The least favorite, probably Father's Day, only because like it's the letdown of the Billy Crystal Robin Williams of it all. That like
that it's very disappointing.
It's so disappointing of a movie. So like Father's Day might be my least favorite.
I mean, Father's Day is probably the worst one. Jack is also bad, but like at least there's like something there.
At least you can spend the movie laughing at the fact that Bill Cosby's in the role that he's in.
Being Human, also pretty bad.
Being Human's like a snoozer of a movie. I couldn't pay attention to anything.
But I mean, my favorite of this era is The Birdcage. Birdcage is great. Yeah. It's a movie I think about a lot.
Respectable. Underrated.
The worst movie, probably Father's Day, Being Human, everything. In terms of like movies that I would describe as like, for lack of a better, I don't know if this is underrated, but I have been thinking about it a lot, is Toys. It's a movie I like that just will pop into my mind, usually because it's that fucking song. If I cannot bring you comfort, then at least I bring you home.
You know, this is our fourth season of this podcast, and I'm almost thinking, like, are we doing ourselves a disservice by, like, having this underrated category? Because I think we've organically come up with a better category seasons ago, which is like the best movie that we wouldn't have seen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, that's always, I mean, and that's
To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
I would probably say it's To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar as well.
I think because like underrated is such a getting in the weeds category of like, well, what's underrated?
How do you define underrated?
It's like, and I'm getting so sick and tired of that conversation. Would you define Hook
as underrated? Would be the problem.
No, not even in the slightest.
No, I'm saying like that's where it leads. That's where the conversation leads you is like, well, Hook got bad reviews and I love Hook. I think Hook is underrated?
No, I think like we've organically come into this better category that I think services our audiences better, which is if you're a fan of this podcast and you like listening to us talk about movies, what's a movie that we implore you to watch the most that we feel strongly that you haven't seen that you should see?
Yeah.
To Wong Fu, Things for Everything, Julie Newmar.
I would agree with that. I think To Wong Fu is also my pick for this.
There are 37 movies in this era.
Yes.
And I'm delivering you one movie that I implore you to watch. That's the category.
Mm-hmm.
I think from now on out, let's make that the new rule.
Yes.
Best, least, and then like the shout out movie.
Yes.
That we wouldn't have seen otherwise. Cool. Do you have anything else to say?
I do. I think my final thought on this whole era is just like, it was a real like joy to go through it. Mm-hmm. This whole series has thus far been a joy, but like this specific run was just like, it's really like rewarding to just like watch a like ultimate talent at like the peak of their success and the peak of their power and just go on that journey with them.
Yeah.
It's very gratifying.
Something that actually like, I know we're kind of short on time, but we have typically done this in other retrospectives is compare these like high rising fame eras with the other folks.
Yeah, this one's so different than the others.
Because everybody has the beginnings, everybody has the high rise, everybody has the fall. Like that's the motif for a podcast. And so if we're looking back, this is our titular like high rise to fame era of Robin Williams, and thinking about, you know, Winona's got that It Girl retrospective and then the Dramatic Explorations retrospective.
Yeah.
Right. Then the rebuild and Nostalgia Queen. But like this is like her Dramatic Explorations era, or this is Brendan Fraser's mainstream success era. This is Travolting's the A-list era, right?
Yeah.
And I think Robbins is the most like
It's the longest run. And it's the most like this is definitely not a consistent era, but it's the most consistent of them that we've covered.
Yeah.
Like I think like he's kind of like got the most going on over this period.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Like I think this is the most consistent era, cuz I'm just looking at Winona Ryder and it's like we got Bram Stoker's Age of Innocence back to back, Little Women, The Crucible, Girl Interrupted. And then it just kind of like drops down a little bit from there. So like, and then Fraser's Edge, it's The Mummy, Georgia.
I mean,
the Jungle.
His like A-list era is so short.
It is.
When we talk about Brandon.
It's cut short.
It's cut
very short. Travolta has like a long A-list era, but it's not consistent. Because lest we forget, we have our A-list era ending in between Bolt and The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. And we have the A-list era beginning with Pulp Fiction. There is a movie in the middle of that called Battlefield Earth.
There's a movie called Battlefield Earth.
So like all that's to say, I 100% agree with you, Jeff, that like Robin has the most consistent like high rise, you know, era for him.
Yes. Robin like it's ultimately the most consistent, and it's been like a genuine joy to go through. And we're in like the ways that the other ones, like there have been movies where, and this Robin had some bad movies in here, but like there's some are like, oh boy.
You usually forgave him pretty quickly.
Yeah,
afterwards.
something pretty good to be coming right after, which is something we're about to lose a little bit.
Yeah,
we shan't be having.
That we're
as much
we're gonna
anymore.
Have to like suck as much marrow out of AI as we can before we get into the real doldrums.
More of Insomnia too. A movie I would just like to warn you, Stuart, about the Insomnia episode.
What about it?
That'll be me just doing an Al Pacino voice talking about how tired I am the whole episode. Have you seen Insomnia?
A long time ago, yes.
That whole movie is just, oh my God, I need to sleep. Yeah. I can't sleep. The sun's coming in the room.
Yeah, and like, I'm trying to think. The only other thing I would say here, which I sadly don't have a lot of things to say because I've just been so strapped on time and I haven't had time to like do as much research, is like, where is Robin in his personal life at this point in time? I mean, like, there's a story I will say that I think deserves to be in this episode and not the Patch Adams episode. But the morning after he wins his Oscar, he's going to the set of Patch Adams for a rehearsal.
Yes.
They're not going to shoot till after lunch. And the director calls him. He's like, hey, we're just going to do a rehearsal and then we'll get you hair and makeup ready. So yeah, no stress. We don't have that much work to do today. It's going to be a pretty reasonable day. Robin shows up to set and all the crew, extras, other cast, the producers that are all there give him a standing ovation as he walks in after just winning his Oscar. Yeah.
It's very cool.
It's the last like two lines in like the Supernova chapter of the book, which it's so like, but it's also daunting because it's like, and this is like another one of like Robin's like, you know, core memory moments of like feeling like he's on top of the world, but it's only going to go downhill. With Patch Adams. Like, that's how the chapter ends.
Yeah, it's all going to go down.
And it's like,
with Patch Adams.
And it's like, oh my God.
A crazy thing to say.
Okay, now I've officially exhausted everything I could talk about.
Yeah, I think I've said my piece.
Yeah. Well.
Stuart, are you aware that John Travolta has finished filming his JFK assassination movie?
Good. You know, I used to be so like, why are we still covering this guy? But now it's like, I'm hitting this moment of him, but it's like, I just want to see what fucking dumb shit he
does. Coming down the pike.
Don't quote me on this, guys, because next week when we cover Patch Adams, sir, I'll switch my tune and be like, why are we covering Travolta?
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you all so much for listening to the retrospective thespian era of Robin Williams. Join us next week for the beginning of what I am calling the old dog era, title still pending, the old dog era, where we will begin the era by covering Patch Adams. We'll be joined by Alex Wilson for that one. I'm sure that's going to be a really fun episode. If you like this episode, remember to rate, review, comment, like, subscribe, whatever platform, listen on, of which we're on pretty much whatever platform you get your podcast. Special thanks to Michael Van Bogen Smith for the theme music and Rebecca for the graphic design. See you all next week for the Patchy.
The Patchy
Adams.